All right. This meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee will now come to order. It is 3:19 on Wednesday, February 5th, in the Barnes Room 124. In the room, we have Representative Gillis, Representative Hannon, who's going to have to leave to present a bill a little bit later, Representative Story. Representative Rasmussen is out sick, and we've been joined by Representative Fields. Thank you for joining us, Representative Merrick as well, and then myself, Ivy Sponholz. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Take a moment to silence your cell phones if you haven't already done so for the duration of the meeting. Before we get started, I want to thank Sophia Tenney, the House Labor and Commerce Secretary from Records, and Amanda Kraft from the Juneau LAO for staffing the committee, as well as Ted Madsen, who's the aide for Labor and Commerce now. Today, we're going to hear from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development on proposed regulations they initiated back in December related to plumbing and electrical workforce training. We'll also be hearing from some invited affected stakeholder on those issues. We're going to get started with Gray Mitchell. If you can come up, put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'd like to also be joined by Joe Knowles, who's the Deputy Director for Labor Standards and Safety, if that's
all
okay.
Right. Sure.
Thanks for having us today. My name is Gray Mitchell. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. And as I said, Joe Knowles has joined me. He's the deputy director for the Division of Labor Standards and Safety. I have worked for the Department of Labor for about 28 years. I started back in 1989, working in the Employment Security Division, then spent most of my career in the Labor Standards and Safety Division in the wage and hour office, and then transitioned into the director of labor standards and safety for quite a period of time, about 13 years. And so I have a pretty deep background with labor standards and safety, and just wanted to provide that background. And Deputy Director Knowles is going to introduce himself and kind of explain his background for you.
Good afternoon, Joseph Knowles. I am a prior military veteran, retired after a little over 30 years out of Elmendorf, Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson. In December of 14, started with the state with the Department of Labor in the Division of Employment Training Services out at the Mat-Su Job Center in Wasilla. And recently in August of the previous year, I was moved over into the Deputy Director position for Labor Standards and Safety.
And welcome to both of you. And fun fact trivia for the day is that my mother helped establish the job centers out throughout the state of Alaska, including the one out in Wasilla that you worked at.
Awesome. So I'm going to be leading the presentation today with some assistance from Joe Knowles. And we also have Will Harlan on the phone, who's the program manager for the mechanical inspection section in the Labor Standards and Safety Division. So if things really get deep into questions, then we may ask for Mr. Harlan to weigh in. Before getting into the details of the proposed regulation, I wanted to give you just a general introduction. There's been a lot of confusion and misinformation about these proposed regulations, and we appreciate the opportunity to provide clarification. Much of the regulation package involves routine code updates, building code updates. Many of the public comments that we received indicated that people may have some misconceptions about the goal of the regulations and believe that it has a goal to eliminate apprenticeship requirements or reduce workplace safety and health standards. And neither of these assertions is accurate. Registered apprenticeship will still be mandatory to qualify to take the journeyman, plumber, electrician, or lineman exam after 8,000 hours of work experience. The proposal will allow for an alternate pathway for businesses who don't want to use the registered apprenticeship model and for individual Alaskans who either can't get into an apprentice program or just don't want to be involved in that kind of training program. The alternate pathway will require 12,000 hours of documented work experience performing work subject to the code in which they're working toward to get their journeyman license before they're qualified to sit for the exam. The proposal does not change the minimum ratios of journeymen to apprentices that have been on the books for decades. The proposal also does not change occupational safety and health standards that employers must comply with to maintain safe and healthy workplaces. Our goal was simple: to increase training opportunities and employment opportunities for individual Alaskans and give employers more options to train their future workforce. Federally registered apprenticeship is extremely competitive, so a lot of Alaskans get left out, and some employers just don't want the federal government dictating how they train their workforce. We believe that an alternate pathway will provide opportunities for smaller businesses in more rural areas to provide a trainee an opportunity to learn the plumbing or electrical trade. These local trainees are likely to stay and provide services to the community for years to come. Registered apprenticeship is a great training tool. We're not disputing that. But it's not a good fit for all businesses or for all Alaskans. As a result of the restrictive regulations that only allow training through federally registered apprenticeship, many employers simply don't participate in workforce training in these categories. Data illustrates a growing shortage of qualified trade workers across the country. If you want to check it, just Google plumber shortage, electrician shortage, and you'll see a massive number of hits. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the National Electrical Contractors Association, 7,000 electricians join the trade each year, but 10,000 retire. So there's a huge gap. The Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Excuse me. Yeah. Do you have those numbers for Alaska?
I don't. I just have the national numbers.
I think given the fact that our economy tends to be countercyclical to the rest of the country, it would be important to have those numbers.
The BLS projects faster than average job growth for plumbers and electricians. And we do have data for these numbers for Alaska. And in both of these categories, the research and analysis section of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development has calculated that average job growth for electricians and plumbers is much higher than average. They rate it very high. We simply want to increase opportunities and empower Alaska businesses with choices about how to best train their future workers through on-the-job training. The department has also intended to increase educational opportunities for Alaskans to receive real-world hands-on electrical and plumbing training in programs like AvTech. But due to the comments and after reevaluating the proposal, we've decided to rework that part of the proposal, and that was the part of the proposal that would have allowed 10 students to be supervised by one instructor journeyman in that field in a program like AvTech, but we've decided to back away from that. So with that introduction, I'd like to get into the details of the reg package, which I understand has been passed out to the committee.
We have a question from Representative Hannon.
Okay. Thank you, through the chair. Before we get into the reg package, and you referenced that there were Alaskan businesses who wanted to grow their own and they wanted, and I think your phrasing is alternative pathway. Can you tell me the number of businesses and the frequency? You're a data guy. How often you've heard that, where those communities are, what the types of businesses are?
I can't give you specific details on the numbers. I can tell you that anecdotally, there are a lot of businesses out there that want to have an internal training program where they don't have to have the federal government looking over their shoulder while they're training their workforce.
Follow up?
Thank you. I guess that in and of itself sets off another alarm because there are many many Alaskans who don't want the feds touching our business or taxing us, but that in of itself is sort of a philosophical basis. So I'm really looking for, you know, are there no certified plumbers in Kotzebue that can serve that entire region, and you hear from that region annually, quarterly, or daily that we need plumbers and there's nobody here to train a journeyman plumber, or, you know, versus I live in the Mat-Su and I don't want anybody inspecting my house, regulating my house, checking my work, and I don't want to have to have a license to be a contractor. Mm-hmm. And you see anecdotally that there's a big swath there that gives rise to, I just don't want the feds knowing my business when OSHA has an obligation to inspect all work and make sure all workplaces are safe. And my concern is us acquiescing that authority to make sure all Alaskans working are in safe working standards, and all Alaskans who are consumers are able to say, I hired a plumber, they plumbed my house, therefore my plumbing works.
Through the chair, that was a long question. So first off, I wasn't referring to OSHA when I said that businesses don't want to have the federal government looking over their shoulder. I was referring to the Office of Apprenticeship and Training, which has standards for apprenticeship programs. And this only relates to training the workforce. It doesn't relate to occupational safety and health standards. The part of your question about you know, whether we're seeing huge outcries from areas about shortages of workers, I would say that I don't have specific data to that, but if you ask any contractor that's trying to get electrical or plumbing work done, they will tell you there's a shortage. It's difficult and it's expensive.
I think we'll have an opportunity to hear from some contractors on Friday. Representative Hannon, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you. I do have a follow-up, and I certainly have the impression that it's not just plumbing and electrical, that in all skilled trades, in virtually every profession in Alaska, employers have difficulty finding the doctors to serve them, the lawyers who are licensed and passed the bar, or the carpenter who has experience. So are you asserting that plumbing and electrical contractors have an even greater shortage than any other skilled trade or any licensed profession in the state, or these are just two that you've decided we can develop an alternative pathway around?
Thanks for the question, through the chair. Electrical and plumbing are the two categories that mandate the only way that a person can receive training is through a federally registered apprenticeship program. If you're talking about power equipment operators or carpenters or laborers or any of the other building trades, they are not mandated to have enrollment in a federally registered apprenticeship in order to receive training. And so this is the area that we're focused on in creating a similar environment to what all of these other trades have, where some of them are trained through a registered apprenticeship and some of them are trained through on-the-job training, to allow for that same kind of scenario to play out in the electrical and plumbing industries.
All right, Representative Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. I guess, and Mr. Mitchell, when you go through the regs, I'd be interested in focusing just on the OJT pathway, since that's where all the controversy is. I'm not aware of concerns about the other code updates. I did want to say I worked with Mr. Mitchell, Mr. Knowles, many other staff at the Department of Labor. Enjoyed every moment of it. Great department, great staff. So thanks to everyone in the department for the work that many of you have done for many years. My one question I had was, how many apprenticeship specialists currently work in the State Department of Labor, and do they still work both in Anchorage and in the Mat-Su and the Kenai, sort of spread out at job centers around the state?
Through the chair. I would hate to misrepresent exactly what DETS data is at this particular point, but I believe in concept what you're remembering is still in place.
Still in place, okay, great.
Did you have a follow-up?
I do. Do you have a rough sense of how many employers state apprenticeship specialists have worked with say in the recent past, perhaps in concert with the federal Department of Labor to expand apprenticeships, including in communities beyond, say, South Central.
Through the chair. Representative Fields, the job centers, when I left, had business connection specialists and apprenticeship specialists on the career support and training side as well to help administer the grants for those that were eligible for those types of assistance. And I would say that, and again, without providing specifics for each job center, that the majority of them either have those technicians within their job centers performing those for their areas, or they work through the technology and the referral process to cover the areas that don't have those technicians within the job centers.
Great. So, Madam Chairman.
Did you have a follow-up?
Well, I was just going to make a comment, if that's okay. I think the first apprenticeship specialist in the department was trained back when Commissioner Bishop was the commissioner, and mm-hmm. it's good to see that those efforts have continued across many administrations. And mm-hmm. I know when I worked in the department helped start apprenticeship programs for many of our rural community health centers, and I'm glad to see that capacity still exists and is there for construction employers throughout the state. If there's time, I'd like to ask another line of questions.
I'd actually like to hold the questions for now.
Okay.
And allow Mr. Mitchell the opportunity to walk through the regs, and then just as a sort of a protocol in this particular committee, I think people can just reference me as Chair Sponholz. I'm very well in my gender and don't need to be reminded, even though I understand it's a part of the decorum. It's my preference that I just be referenced as Chair. So go ahead.
Chair Sponholz, just a point of clarification. Did you want a summary of the entire package, or did you want me to just focus on the part of the package that deals with registered apprenticeship?
I'd like you to focus on the part of the package that relates to apprenticeship.
Okay.
That seems to be the piece that's controversial.
Right. There were several sections of the regulation package that addressed updating various elements of the codes. And for that reason, some of the comments that we received, it was difficult to ascertain how to classify them in terms of whether they were specifically opposed to the entire regulation package, or opposed to code adoption, or opposed to the apprentice piece of it, or opposed to the student trainee piece of it. And so there's been some reports, and I'm only bringing this up to kind of build the context for the committee, that there was some confusion in trying to determine how the comments applied to the regulations. And so just so that the committee is aware.
You know, Mr. Mitchell, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second there. And I just, this is a bit of an editorial, but I'm reviewing the document that was produced by the department that describes, that lists all of the people who submitted comments and a description of their comment. And I see that there's quite a few comments which have now been classified as unclear. But when I look at your own department summary of the comments, they seem very clear to me. Unclear, Ella Demoski, opposed to the decision to end any apprenticeship electrical standards. Unclear, Patrick O'Donnell, opposed to the state's anti-apprenticeship regulation. You know, and this goes on for pages and pages. So I guess I'm going to just, you know, sort of say I'm not sure that I agree with that characterization. I think that's
understood.
Inaccurate.
Chair Sponholz, just to respond, you know, the comment, for example, being opposed to ending apprenticeship,
mm-hmm.
again, it's unclear because the regulations don't propose to do that.
You're creating a pathway around apprenticeship that requires little to no documentation, little to no standards. That, I think, sounds like a workaround apprenticeship. You're saying, well, we're not going to disallow apprenticeship, we're just going to create something else that's really easy to do that doesn't have the kinds of standards mm-hmm. that are required by apprenticeship. That's effectively, you know, undermining apprenticeship.
I understand.
I'll allow you to proceed forward with your description of the regulations. I just wanted to clarify that. I think that it's a mischaracterization of the comments to say that they weren't clear about their position.
Okay.
That's a good question.
We're going to let him proceed.
What's
We're going to let them proceed for now.
Okay. So the first element of the regulation package that falls into this alternate pathway category is at page 15 and 16 of the proposed regulations. 8 AAC 90.130 is the regulation that applies to the plumber journeyman certificate of fitness. And you'll notice there that the requirement to be in a federally registered apprenticeship still applies in order to acquire your certificate of fitness at 8,000 hours. A person who comes in to make their application for a certificate of fitness would need to document that the 8,000 hours were legally obtained work experience while enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship. So again, we're not eliminating apprenticeship. We are creating an alternate pathway, which is not easy. It requires 12,000 hours of on-the-job work experience. And that work experience has to be subject to the applicable code. So again, it's not a simple process to spend 12,000 hours performing work subject to the National Electrical Code or the National Electrical Safety Code or the Uniform Plumbing Code. And all of that experience would have to be documented and sworn under oath by an employer. Then the regulation still would require that worker under an alternate pathway to pass the comprehensive examination for electricians, plumbers, or linemen in order to be able to gain access to their certificate of fitness. And it's interesting to note that this section essentially reestablishes a pathway that existed prior to 2003 where employers and employees could, through on-the-job training, work together to provide the experience necessary in the code so that the individual pursuing a certificate of fitness could become a journeyman upon passing the four-hour comprehensive code exam. But back before 2003, it required the same level of experience as registered apprenticeship, 8,000 hours. So what we're proposing is raising that bar to 12,000 hours. It's also noteworthy that under current regulations, a person coming from another jurisdiction that does not require apprenticeship can qualify to take the journeyman exam after documenting 8,000 hours of plumbing code experience or electrical experience, so long as that experience was gained in accordance with the local laws. Now, we've done some research and 37 states do not require registered apprenticeship in order to gain experience performing code work as an electrician or a plumber. So effectively, we've set Alaskans at a disadvantage with people who are coming from other states that can gain their experience through on-the-job training after just 8,000 hours and qualify to sit for the exam, whereas an Alaskan cannot do that same thing. The proposed regulations would require non-residents coming from other states to have the same 12,000 hours of experience if they didn't gain their experience through a registered apprenticeship program. So in effect, this would level the playing field between Alaskans and people coming from other states, 37 other states, that don't require registered apprenticeship in order to gain training in the electrical or plumbing industry. And just to clarify, the proposal does not change federal registered apprenticeship standards. It does not eliminate federal registered apprenticeship for plumbers and electricians. And in fact, it maintains it the same as it is now for 8,000 hours of work experience. The proposed regulations do not change any occupational safety and health standards, and those are the standards that help ensure safe and healthy work environments, which are the same regardless if a person is enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship or they receive their training through on-the-job training sources.
Mr. Mitchell? You said that that our current structure creates sort of an unlevel playing field where non-Alaskans can come in and with 8,000 hours and not within an apprenticeship program and test. How many people do that on average each year?
I don't have specific numbers, but it's certainly an open opportunity.
I think if you could follow up with that information, that'd be helpful.
We do have Will Harlan online, and I don't know. Will, would it be okay to?
Absolutely, call a lifeline.
Through the chair, this is Will Harlan. I'm the Chief of Mechanical Inspection for Labor and Workforce Development. Mm-hmm. We don't have the stats available easily. We don't track the sourcing of applications on a regular basis. We could find the information, but it would require a manual search of applications through a given time range to determine where the qualifying hours came from.
Okay, it just strikes me as odd that you would cite something anecdotally as evidence for your regulation and then not have the citations to back it up.
Madam
Chair. Go ahead. Yes, on Representative Fields.
On this point, through the chair, I know the state of Washington actually requires completion of registered apprenticeship to take the exams, which is a stronger regulation than the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. Of course, some states have weaker regulations. I guess my question is, how many other states beyond Washington have stronger regulations than we do?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, we did do some research, and I don't think that we drilled into states that are more strict than Alaska, but it is a good point that Alaska does not require completion of the registered apprenticeship program, and so that could result in someone getting 8,000 hours of experience without completing the related course instruction or some of the other elements of the apprenticeship once they had that 8,000 hours of work experience. As long as it was gained in a registered apprenticeship, they would qualify in Alaska. But in Washington, they actually have to complete the course, do all of the related instruction, all of the steps. And so there are, would it be okay to ask Will Harlan
sure.
if he might have any more information about states that are more strict than Alaska?
Mr. Harlan?
Through the chair to Representative Fields, this is Will Harlan. So in the states that I'm familiar with that require apprenticeship registration as part of their trainee certificate of fitness or equivalent or to qualify hours for journeyman licensure, I have found that, and this is anecdotal, but I think it's safe to say that the majority of the states with the requirement require completion of the apprenticeship. That was the experience. So I think that Washington is probably pretty typical of the states that require apprenticeship.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Proceed.
Okay. And again, just finishing up on the plumber certificate of fitness section. The proposed regulations don't change the current minimum ratio of journeymen to trainees. That's, as I said, been in regulation for many, many years as 2-to-1, two trainees to one journeyman. The proposed regulations will not limit a trainee pursuing their training under an alternate pathway from taking credit for hours engaged in accredited classroom training that exist under the current regulations to help them acquire the 12,000 hours of experience and qualify to take and pass the exam. And so it's intended that the 12,000-hour program would involve some classroom-related, although self-directed, not government-controlled, classroom training. The next part of the proposal, and I'm going to jump from apprenticeship to another piece, which just because it follows in order in the regulation package, and that's at page 16 through 18. It's 8AAC90.137. Mm-hmm. It's the plumber restricted plumber utility certificate of fitness. This proposed section would remove the examination requirement for a plumber utility certificate of fitness. This change was made with input from plumber utility worker representatives in the laborers union, mm-hmm. which is the primary group that performs this plumber utility work. And their concern was that the test really didn't test knowledge and code and was considered to be an unnecessary barrier to licensure. So the next section, and this goes back to the alternate pathway for training in the plumbing category, and this is at page 18 and 19, mm-hmm. 8AAC90.140, mm-hmm. the plumber trainee certificate of fitness. And this is where the current restriction that limits Alaskans from receiving any training in the plumbing trade unless they're enrolled in a federally controlled and recognized registered apprenticeship program. So that this is where I think the concern comes from. People looked at that and said, well, you're eliminating apprenticeship, without looking at the other provision that says, well, no, the requirement still is there in order to gain your experience at 8,000 hours and qualify to sit for the exam. This proposal set of the proposal also repeals a reference to the on-the-job training option to document work experience that existed prior to 2003. It was repealed in 2006, and so now it would just be completely taken off the books. The proposal removes the requirement that a trainee would have to surrender their trainee certificate of fitness if they failed to continuously be enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship program, because we're creating this alternate pathway as a proposal. And finally, this section would establish a standard to allow the department to reciprocate plumbing certificate of fitnesses, just like we do currently with electrical certificate of fitnesses. But under limited conditions with another state when the licensure requirements are similar, substantially similar to Alaska's. Questions? The next section.
Oh, it looks like we have a question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. So how many states have regulations that would be similar or standards that would be similar?
Our initial research indicates about 13.
Follow?
So are those the 13 states that also have registered apprenticeship programs?
They do. And maybe it would be appropriate for Will Harlan to weigh in on this question. Would that be okay, Chair Sponholz?
Mr. Harlan?
Through the chair, this is Will Harlan. Representative Hannon, so for example, for electrical, I'm going to take us to the electrical reciprocal agreements that we do have as an example. Some of our states require apprenticeships, some do not. We don't require apprenticeship completion in Alaska, we don't have that as a qualifying factor for our reciprocal agreements, and it would be the same with plumbing. I can pull it up here and get back to you in a moment if you'd like, but I do believe there are a couple of states on the plumbing side, for example, that do not have apprenticeship required but still have the same number of hours that we have, and as long as they have the hours and are required to pass a test at their level, we would be interested in exploring reciprocation with those states.
Paula?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair Sponholz. I would like to know, because of course you've cited those numbers, and if we're going to offer reciprocity, we should know how many we're talking about, or, you know, yeah. So I want to know those numbers.
Yeah, please, if you could follow up, you could shoot us an email and I'll distribute that to the committee.
And through the chair, just as a point of clarification, it might help for Mr. Harlan to explain how the reciprocal process works. You know, it's not simply that, you know, because it's on the page, we're automatically going to reciprocate. There would be a process for review and evaluation, and if you wanted to, Mr. Harlan could certainly expand on that.
I will invite Mr. Harlan to do that after I recognize that Representative Stutz has joined us. Mr. Harlan?
Through the chair for the committee, this is Will Harlan. Sure, just a brief overview of reciprocity and how it works. The state of Alaska is a member of an informal group of states with similar requirements that was started a couple of decades ago. It's now known as the National Electrical Reciprocal Alliance. And we meet annually to ensure that all of our standards are consistent enough to have agreements. And between those states that we're allowed to have, that we find substantial compliance with each other's licensing requirements, we will draft written agreements between the two states, and they'll go through a review process through our respective departments of law, and then be signed by agency heads at each state. And then those remain in effect for a period of time or until we cancel them. With plumbing, since we don't have a similar organization to kind of reference, it would be more a matter of looking at other states' requirements and then reaching out to those states and offering the potential of discussions for an agreement. But the process would basically be the same. We would enter into a written agreement with that state and then honor their evaluation of ours and their tests, as well as they would be honoring ours.
Question? Thank you, and through the chair, the number of members of the National Electrical Reciprocal Alliance that we are working with again?
Through the chair, this is Will Harlan. Right now, there are 14 member states of the National Electrical Reciprocal, I'm sorry, there are 17 member states of the National Electrical Reciprocal Alliance, and we have reciprocal agreements with 11 of them at this time.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Proceed.
Okay, the next section is at page 19 through 21 of the proposed regulations, and this is 8AAC90.160, the Electrical Journeyman Certificate of Fitness. The changes here are basically the same as the changes that were made to the section on the plumber journeyman certificate of fitness, establishing the 8,000-hour requirement to be registered as an in a federally registered apprenticeship program in order to qualify to take the journeyman exam, and then establishing the alternate pathway at 12,000 hours of documented on-the-job experience, subject to the code and passing the exam. Mm-hmm. Again, the proposal does the same thing, puts Alaskans on an equal footing with trainees coming from other states where registered apprenticeship is not required, and also clarifies that the current limitation that only 2,000 hours of electrical code work experience doing residential electrical work would count toward the 12,000 hours of work experience requirement to qualify to take the journeyman electrician exam. The proposal also contained a clarification that hours obtained through the proposed educational trainee certificate of fitness would count toward the 1,000 hours of required experience. However, as I said, we've decided to not move forward with that proposal at this time, so we're taking that part out. The next section is at page 21 through 22.
Mr. Mitchell, could you clarify which section you said you're not going to be advancing?
8AAC90.300. And so there was a section under the proposed regs for 8AAC90.160.
Mm-hmm. The electrician journeyman certificate.
Who gained experience through a student training program like at AvTech,
right,
to be able to transfer some of those credit hours to the 12,000-hour requirement for experience. But we're taking that out.
Follow?
Chair, but is it remaining on the Because I'm reading it on page 20. And so is it just you're deleting that, or I'm reading a duplicative of a different section that you have? Are we looking at the current reg proposal, or there's an amendment to it? And so on page 20, under AA 930, section, subsection E, F, and G.
Through the chair, the regulation process is a little bit different than what you might be used to with legislation. There is not a process for us to, you know, provide you with, you know, sort of on-the-fly changes, but I can tell you that Commissioner Ledbetter has decided that she does not want to move forward with this provision, so we're not moving forward with it.
Well, Chair, so I'm just trying to be really clear. So can I verify that at the bottom of page 20, where the citation to the statute is, or to the reg, AAC 90.300, mm-hmm. from there to the bottom of page 20 and through the is what you were talking that you mm-hmm. won't be going forward mm-hmm. with, where it references up to 1,000 hours of experience, of work experience.
Right. So through the chair, on page 20, subparagraph D, about halfway down the page, mm-hmm. is the paragraph that would be stricken.
Just paragraph D.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, continue.
Okay. And so the next section is at page 21 and 22, and this is 8 AAC 90.162, the power lineman journeyman certificate of fitness. Mm-hmm. This section initially proposed to eliminate the electrical lineman exam. However, the department has decided not to move forward with that element of the proposal. The journeyman lineman exam is woefully out of date and really does not test adequately a lineman's ability in the code. And so, and there has been over the years efforts from various utility companies to have that test removed because, again, it was viewed as an unnecessary barrier to licensure. But after thinking about this more, we've decided to maintain that exam and work with utility companies and line construction entities to develop a better test that represents the code requirements better. And that plays into the establishment of this alternate pathway for training, because we did recognize that if we are going to have again the I'm sorry,
go ahead, continue.
Okay. So as I said, the proposal establishes the same standard that exists today for a person who's going to be considered qualified to sit for the lineman exam to gain 8,000 hours of experience enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship. That is not going away. The proposal does establish an alternate pathway, again, for 12,000 hours of documented code work experience in the National Electrical Safety Code outside electrical work. And, of course, that work would have to be done under the supervision of a qualified journeyman lineman working for a licensed electrical contractor under the oversight of a properly licensed electrical administrator. And then they would qualify to take the lineman exam. And again, establishing this alternate pathway was part of the reason why we decided that we still need the exam. And really, even if you gain your experience through apprenticeship, eliminating the exam is probably making it a little bit too easy.
Question, Representative Yannon?
The chair. So in the regs that we're looking at, we don't see reference to the exam?
It's because, through the chair, it was deleted. in the proposal, so it would be added back. And we've gotten guidance from the Department of Law that we can essentially make the regulations what they are today without having to renotice, or, you know, we basically just say, oh, we decided not to do that.
Maybe, Mr. Mitchell, you could follow up after this meeting with a summary email or letter that describes which portions of the reg package are going to be advanced, which additions will be added, and which things will be removed. For clarity, we're looking at a document and we're hearing a lot of descriptions about things that will be added and removed, and it's not very clear for us just in terms of clarity and understanding. Representative Fields.
And on that point, I might suggest through the chair that the department consider re-advertising the package that it now contemplates moving forward with, since a lot of people representing the entire spectrum of industry submitted comments on one package. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. And just to the chair's comment, it's a little bit awkward because we are still evaluating this regulation package. I can tell you what decisions have been made up to now, but you know, it's still not a final decision, and that is up to the commissioner.
That may be so. I think it's fair that we all understand what it is that you are in fact proposing or not proposing, and from our perspective, we're having difficulty following you, and there's a bunch of incredibly bright people on this committee that are having difficulty being clear on what is included and what is not going to be included, because it's not on a page for us to look at and react to. So that, if you can give us some information on that, that'd be helpful.
Thank you. And that is what we had hoped to do during this session, is provide that kind of information and a basic understanding of what the regulation package proposes to do. But we can provide you with an update. It will be changes that have been agreed to or approved by the commissioner to date, but we are still in the process, and so it's not final and could change.
Could I ask a question, too, on the part
right,
we just
had? We've got a couple of questions. Let's start with Representative Stutz, because she hasn't had a chance
Thank
to
you.
Comment
and
yet.
And I am pleased to accept my apologies for being late to the committee and through the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to what you're saying, and agree I've come in late. But it seems to me you might be a little premature presenting this bill. Or this packet, am I?
Well, it's not actually a bill. It's a regulation package that the department has proposed, and we're having an informational hearing.
Okay, and that's my fault for not being through the chair. It's my fault for being tardy and not understanding that. But it still seems to me it's a little premature, having you say, well, maybe this and maybe not that, and this might change, and it's confusing, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Mr. Mitchell, you were just talking about the 12,000-hour OJT pathway, and just want to get confirmation that unlike in a registered apprenticeship, there won't be a state or federal department monitoring how many hours were completed doing different sorts of tasks, were those hours conducted under the supervision of a journey worker, and what sort of training standards were in place during those hours. I'm assuming the State Department of Labor is not going to be independently verifying all that for the 12,000-hour OJT pathway.
Through the chair, that's correct. This is not designed to be the same type of training mechanism as registered apprenticeship. It's designed to be a different pathway that allows for employers to control how they train their future workforce. However, it is important to note that the law does require trainees in the electrical and plumbing categories to be licensed, number one, and number two, to be supervised by a licensed journeyman, and then to be working for a licensed electrical contractor who's overseen by a licensed administrator. So we've got a lot of layers here.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. So Mr. Mitchell, on the alternative pathway, 12,000 hours, the phrasing is similar in both plumbing and electrical. Documented proof on a notarized form provided by the department, or a notarized statement on letterhead stationery from employer that you've done the 12,000 hours. So I, in theory, could submit a letter that says over the last 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, I've done 12,000 hours. Joe's licensed electrical, and that's good.
Through the chair, the current regulations today, if someone comes from another state, that is exactly what they do. They provide sworn affidavit from their employers that supervise their work and demonstrate that it's it was performed legally in whatever state they were working in. And so we're basically proposing to use that same standard but up the hours from 8,000 hours to 12,000 hours for Alaskans and people coming from other states to document their work experience.
Follow up. I guess how long would you anticipate 12,000 hours of supervised work to take, and literally that the employer could just send you a letter that says they did my 12,000 hours?
Through the chair, the work experience is expected to take 6 to 7 years to reach 12,000 hours. You know, registered apprenticeship is typically a 4 to 5 year term, and so. And the same standard applies to a registered apprenticeship. They basically have the same documentation requirements to be able to show that they had these 8,000 hours of work experience that was legal, enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship program.
I guess my impression is through an apprenticeship program, that documentation isn't all at the end, one time, one letter, that there are checks on it along that pathway. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to I worked for the old guy in town, and he dropped dead at 11,000 hours, and I have no documentation. I got some pay stubs over the last 6 years, but I don't have the notarized letter. And an apprenticeship program, you did 2 or 3 years, you still had some documentation that your work that far was satisfactory, and you could complete it in another registered apprenticeship program. And so I'm just trying to visualize that 12,000 hours, one piece of stationery that encompasses 7 hours or 7 years of work is our verification. And that's what I'm hearing. We're taking old Joel Plummer's word that 7 years mm-hmm. of 12,000 hours is old Joe could still see to make sure that work was solid.
Through the chair, that's essentially correct, and it's like I said, the same whether you're in a registered apprenticeship or not. The documentation certification of hours that mechanical inspection requires would be the same.
Yeah, before I go to Representative Story, I just want to note that it is about 12 minutes after 4 o'clock. This committee runs until 5:15, and that we've got 4 testifiers that are after this that I want to make sure that we get to. We are on page, 23 of the reg package, so we've made good time through it, but I just want to be mindful of the time for everybody so we can make sure to get everybody that we have scheduled to testify on the record today. Representative Story.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mitchell. I was wondering how many people you estimate have come in through that process, and we have heard that they are very well, they're well qualified through that process.
Which process?
Where they just come in with the documentation, the letter, mm-hmm. from wherever they're coming. Yeah, whatever state they're coming from, how has that been serving us?
Through the chair, again, the certification of hours is the same, whether you're coming through apprenticeship or coming through on-the-job training. And so as Will Harlan explained earlier, they would have to do some research in order to try and parse out the people who are coming in from other states and using experience from other states. But it certainly is an open option now, and it does happen. So I don't know how often it happens, but I suspect it's fairly common.
And as was discussed earlier, I think that, you know, getting that information is an important piece of making the case that creating this alternative pathway is in fact necessary. Yes, Representative Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. I just want to ask, did a specific business ask for the 12,000 hour OJT pathway?
No.
Through the chair.
All right, proceed forward, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, so this, we were at page 23, which again is dealing with the electrician, power lineman, and trainee certificate of fitness. There was a provision in this proposal that allowed, and you aren't going to see it because it's repealed and readopted, but it allowed a journeyman power lineman to work as a trainee, as an electrical journeyman. Or for, I should say, inside electrical work, subject to the National Electrical Code. And it, so basically it allows journeymen to, in one field, whether they're an electrician or a lineman or a wireman, to work in one of the other fields with just as a trainee without getting a trainee license or without being enrolled in a federally registered apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm. And so the proposal proposes to eliminate those options, and basically it's around the idea that that we shouldn't be using journeymen to fill the slots for trainees on projects. We shouldn't be encouraging registered apprenticeship and on-the-job training and trying to fill this gap that we can see coming, because the numbers of workers in the plumbing and electrical and all the building trades that are retiring out are larger than the numbers that are coming in. And so we need to get this figured out, and so that's why those provisions were basically eliminated, to say, you know, you may be a journeyman lineman, but that doesn't give you the right to work as a trainee doing inside electrical work inside somebody's house. The proposal also removes the requirement that a trainee needs to surrender their trainee certificate of fitness if they fail to be continuously enrolled in a federally apprenticeship program. And again, that falls back to the alternate pathway that we're creating, so that there's not just one way to become trained. The next provision is at page 24 to 25. And this is the new subsection that we had proposed for a student trainee certificate of fitness. This did get quite a bit of attention in the public comment, because there was a proposed ratio of one instructor to 10 students. This would have been in programs like AvTech, where they're not necessarily working in a regular employment scenario, but they might go out and build a tiny house, or, you know, do some work in a facility that that would involve some real world work in the plumbing or electrical trade. And currently they can't do that without being licensed and enrolled in a federally recognized apprenticeship program. But we've decided, as I said, to eliminate this proposal. So all of everything under 8AAC90.300 is not going to move forward. The next part of the proposal is at page 26 to 27. This is 8AAC90.900, some adjustments to definitions. And this proposal first updates the name of the Office of Apprenticeship and Training. It hasn't been the Bureau of Apprenticeship and Training for several years. The proposal also establishes a definition of electrical wiring that's at paragraph 10. To clarify that certain work activities do not require an electrical certificate of fitness license, such as operating tree trimming equipment, flying a helicopter, or operating heavy equipment. This proposal mirrors current policy, and that is based on longstanding guidance from the Attorney General's Office under Attorney General Opinion 166-300-84, which was in May 1st of 1984. And basically it's just clarifying that you don't need to be an electrician to operate the loader or you know, to operate the chainsaw, those kinds of things. This proposal also establishes the definition of plumbing, which is paragraph 16, to clarify similar things, that the work activities would not require a plumbing certificate of fitness, such as operating heavy power equipment on a job site where plumbing was being done.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Fields.
I think the regarding next steps, and given the complexity and controversial nature of these regs, I would certainly urge the department to just re-advertise for public comment with whatever you contemplate going forward with. But if you were not to do that, I think the department had referenced working with AWIB, and specifically, how do you envision working with AWIB? Is that just presenting at one meeting, or is it a much more extensive consultation process? And how do you ensure that the stakeholders among these 375 people and organizations that commented against the regs are being adequately consulted on the updated version of them?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, that is to be determined. The commissioner is taking a close look at how to involve the Workforce Investment Board. Of course, there are a variety of interests represented on that board, and they do take the lead on workforce training initiatives. I believe that the main goal of that interaction would be to improve the proposal that would allow for people to be trained as students in electrical and plumbing work. And so that provision that we've eliminated that would have allowed AVTEC or Juno Douglas High School or whatever, you know, state or federal or local school district program to have a training program where they did some limited, you know, trade work that might require a license under, you know, careful supervision. And so I think the idea is to use the AWIB to establish better standards for that, a little bit more comprehensive, and curriculum limitations, just have better controls.
I guess in follow-up to that, you know, what kind of community engagement did you do on the front end in terms of developing this package, identifying what the problem was and developing the proposals? Did you do with the employer community and, you know, the Alaska Workforce Investment Board?
Well, Chair Spinals.
Thank you.
We did have a variety of different discussions with contractors, with you know, groups like the laborers. We didn't have a you know, a stakeholder meeting per se, but we did you know, have a lot of conversations, and you know, a lot of these adjustments are also things that you know, staff have basically heard from the public over, you know, a number of years. And, you know, so when we're looking at regulations that are designed to update codes, and then at the same time we're looking for ways to reduce barriers for Alaskans to access training, we're looking for ways to increase flexibility for employers in Alaska to determine how best to train their workforce, that these ideas came to the surface. And of course, the regulations do have a public process. Mm-hmm. They did go out for public comment from December 4th through January 13th. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was effective. We did get over 350 comments. And we're still considering those. So this is part of the regulation process. It's a little bit different than the legislative process.
That's true. I often think, though, that involving stakeholders on the front end of developing an idea prevents a lot of problems on the back end. Representative Hannon and then Representative Stutes. You didn't have a question? All right, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you touched on it briefly. I just want to verify that I heard you say the stakeholders have not been involved.
Well, through the chair, I would not say that. I said that we didn't have a stakeholder meeting, but we have had discussions with various stakeholders over the past couple of years related to these regulation proposals.
Follow up?
Follow up?
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out how to say this gently. it just almost seems inconceivable to me that you wouldn't have a meeting with the stakeholders. They're the user group. You know, they're the hands-on people, so to speak. And I guess I'm just surprised and really taken aback that you haven't included one of the most important groups in forming these regulations. I mean, they're the user group.
Mm-hmm. And if I may, through the chair, there is not a mandate that every regulation package have a stakeholder meeting. Of course, that has been reevaluated by the current administration, and they've revived a 2013 administrative order. And so moving forward, those kinds of meetings will happen. But there were numerous proposals over the last couple of years that had zero stakeholder meetings. And so it's not something that is out of the ordinary. And the groups that are involved with these proposals are we have discussions with them routinely. And so it's not like we didn't know that there would be concerns about this alternate pathway. We did.
Follow up?
Thank you. And I don't want to get into a discussion, but I'm not talking about mandates, whether or not you're mandated to do this. What I'm suggesting is that your outcome would probably be much more successful had you consulted with the user group. That would be, to me, that's just almost a given. That would be my point.
All right. Thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it. We learned a lot, and I think the discussion was spirited and interesting. I think next up we have John Hakala, who is with the U.S. Department of Labor Office on Apprenticeship. Mr. Hakala, would you put yourself on the record and begin your presentation? I believe Mr. Hakala is online, and Mr. Madsen is going to be queuing up his presentation for us.
Yeah, thank you, and good afternoon. For the record, my name is John Hakala, with the U.S. Department of Labor, the Alaska Office of Apprenticeship. Thank you for inviting me to testify at this House Labor and Commerce Committee meeting. Today, I will present information about the registered apprenticeship system in Alaska and compare it to the proposed 12,000-hour pathway to state electrical and plumber fitness licensing. My presentation will show that the registered apprenticeship system produces highly skilled and qualified license holders for Alaska with significant economic and social benefits. The proposed 12,000-hour pathway to licensing is not a training program. It does not level the playing field, as stated by Mr. Mitchell. Registered apprenticeship is available to any properly licensed contractor. In fact, the majority of program sponsors in Alaska are single-employer programs with fewer than five apprentices. My office works closely with mechanical inspection staff and program sponsors to verify apprenticeship registrations and work hours. To make it simple and manageable for everyone, why not just require the 12,000 hours of documented work experience for out-of-state individuals who have not completed a state or federally registered apprenticeship program and who want to apply for the Alaska Fitness License? Over the years, there are only two changes that my office has requested, and I have always been told that the changes are too controversial. Number one, to require the completion of a registered apprenticeship program. Why require registration in an approved apprenticeship program and not require completion? Number two, to change the 2-to-1 licensing ratio to the 1-to-1 apprenticeship to journey worker ratio, which is the only ratio that my office can approve for the construction occupations because of their high hazard. Since 2003, when these regulations were implemented, the 2-to-1 licensing ratio for plumber and electrical has normalized to reflect the 1-to-1 apprenticeship ratio. So when I'm listening to this, you know, decades of 2-to-1. If the state is really looking at their numbers, labor standards, and safety, there's no reason you couldn't modify these regs to have the 1-to-1 ratio and completion of apprenticeship. Ted, my cover slide's up, correct?
Yes, Ms. Brock.
Okay, next slide, please. Registered apprenticeship is based on structured training standards that include supervised on-the-job learning. Apprentices are paid employees and must complete related technical instruction courses that supplement the on-the-job learning process. Wage advancements are based on successful performance on the job and with the related instruction progress. Registered apprenticeship is a proven workforce development strategy that supports local economies, builds worker skills, and establishes career pathways to higher levels of employment and wages. Next slide, please. Registered apprenticeship in Alaska. Registered apprenticeships in the construction trades have been active in Alaska since the 1940s. Registered apprenticeships in Alaska currently train union and non-union apprentices in 13 industries, 73 occupations, and in 21 borough or census areas: Dutch Harbor, Onalaska, Bethel, Dillingham, Haines, Nikiski, Sterling, Ketchikan, Big Lake, Cordova, Sutton, Nome, Barrow, North Slope, Sitka, Kluwak. We've got several areas where employers are sponsoring programs. Hundreds of millions of private dollars have been invested in apprentices and apprenticeship training centers across the state. 879 Alaskan construction employers participate in the registered apprenticeship system. Next slide, please.
Mr. Hakala, we have a question from Representative Fields.
Thanks. Mr. Hakala, through the chair, I think your slide does a good job showing that there are many apprenticeships that operate in rural Alaska, and I was just looking through the list of apprenticeships. I see 55 that are based in rural areas. My question was, could you explain how an apprenticeship that is technically based in Anchorage, say ABC or Alaska Joint Electrical Apprenticeship and Training Trust, also operates and employs local people in rural areas?
Through the chair, Representative Fields. So a lot of the programs are these are what you're talking about primarily are the multi-employer structures, which have some efficiencies in them. And so they'll recruit apprentices from throughout the state, so they can have apprentices in multiple areas. And rural Alaska is I don't know a program that does not recruit to rural Alaska, these bigger programs. The communities I was talking about there just recently, those are mom-and-pop shops with single-employer programs, and I was just stating up those little communities. So the larger programs all recruit and hire and train apprentices from rural Alaska, and they have active recruitments, to achieve that. Okay? Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you, and okay. I will be back, Madam Chair.
Okay. Benefits for job seekers. Apprenticeship is earn and learn. They're employees from the first day on the job. Other outcomes include career pathways to higher skills and wages. Apprentices receive and earn nationally recognized credentials and the potential to earn college credits. Benefits for employers: to develop highly skilled workers through a flexible, customized training approach. Reduce employee turnover, increase productivity, and improve the bottom line. A transfer of knowledge, skills, and expertise. Improved quality of service and client care, and develop future leadership. The standards of apprenticeship. These smaller single-employer programs for the construction, they're pretty simple. They generally take 1 to 2 weeks to turn around from a completed application submitted to my office to getting the program registered and going through the employer startup. Next slide, please. Registered apprenticeship outcomes. Just a little bit on the economic and social benefits for Alaska. Registered apprenticeship aligns with and advances the goals of key workforce system initiatives, such as Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act at the federal and state level, the Alaska Career and Technical Education Plan, and multiple state strategic workforce plans over the years. This is the first year, and I've been with this position for over 20 years, that the Department of Labor federally has put a registered apprenticeship as their number one goal, performance goal, across all the agencies that are within DOL. And so a lot of effort and dollars are flowing down to the states, to help achieve those outcomes. Stabilize the Alaska economy. Apprentices learn and train locally. It increases the supply of highly skilled Alaskans for local and in mega projects, reduces the recruitment of out-of-state workers. It creates career and business opportunities. This is a national statistic. A multi-state study. Apprentices who complete their program earn approximately $300,000 more over their career than non-apprenticeship workers. Now, I was going to look for some Alaska stats, but the last statistics we had was from Alaska Economic Trends in February 2009. They did a 10-year longitudinal study on apprenticeships in Alaska, and basically the start of it was a measurable path to employment success. And in there, they had, you know, statistics, for example, that showed the average earnings of a registered apprentice who completed was $65,000 and canceled was $33,000. So it's dated statistics, so I wanted to stay with what I knew was current. Employed apprentices raise families and purchase goods, services, vehicles, and homes in Alaska. They become your future business leaders. Next slide, please. Alaska apprenticeship programs. Alaska is still a young and infrastructure state, and so construction nationally is a large piece of the overall pie, and in Alaska it's also large and will remain that way for a long time. Right now I have 329 programs in my workload. Of those, 63% are construction programs. And of the construction programs, electrician comprises 50% of all my construction programs, and plumber, pipe fitter comprises 43%. So it's a major part of the workload. We have a lot of activity in the construction occupations, but electrical, plumber, and carpenter are our highest numbers. The total, again, construction employers participating, 879. That's a pretty accurate statistic. The programs all let me know what they were doing last year and inputted their employers. And all I had to do was call them. It's a partnership. It's not a forced mandate. Mm-hmm. Alaska apprentices. Right now we have about 1,978 apprentices. We're in a recession. Several years back we almost topped 3,000, so that's kind of where we are at our sweet spot. I think we've reached as high as 3,000. Of those, 84% are construction apprentices. And then for the electrical and the plumbing, if you combine those, they're about 60% of all active apprentices in Alaska. So that's kind of how my apprentice workload figures out there. Apprenticeship completions from October 2003, that's when these regulations came into effect, and then to February 4 of 2020 when I was looking at my numbers. There's been 1,726 registered apprenticeship completions in those trades since these regulations came into effect that required registration of apprenticeship. If I go back and utilize that $300,000 statistic about how they'll earn more than a non-completer, that's $518 million potentially extra that's been spent in Alaska based solely on apprenticeship completion. Mm-hmm. I also want to let everybody know that completing an apprenticeship is a significant life and career event. And as far as wages and these kind of statistics, the proposed 12,000-hour pathway finishes last. Next slide, please.
I'm sorry,
you're
going to
see
Hakala,
a table now that is
Mr.
a comparison
Hakala?
Of the 8,000. Go ahead.
Could you restate that last sentence?
Oh, okay. Yes, through the chair. So with the 1,726 completions mm-hmm. that Alaska has had since in plumbing mm-hmm. and electrical since October 2003 to February 4, if I multiply 1,726 by $300,000, the total is $517,800,000. That's how much more these workers potentially can earn over their career than non-apprenticeship workers. That's a statistic. 300,000 is a national statistic. It was a multi-state study.
Yeah,
does
you
that
said
answer your question?
You said something about the 12,000-hour pathway coming
okay,
last.
And then with that, the proposed 12,000-hour pathway finishes last with wages. Mm-hmm. It just isn't going to be able to compete with this.
Okay.
That was my.
All right.
My,
thank you. That's helpful.
Just a handwritten note on my slide. I apologize. So next slide, please, onto that table. The comparison of the 8,000-hour apprenticeship to the 12,000-hour license as far as elements. Mm-hmm. You can see where the apprenticeship program is based on recognized industry training standards. It is structured. structured on-the-job learning under the guidance of a qualified journey worker. The apprentice learns the whole job from A to Z, from rough into trim out. They're valuable to the employer for the complete job, not just for little pieces of it. They're trained to do, again, complex work activities, not just installing light fixtures or switches or sweeping the floor. They become very valuable to Alaska for future infrastructure projects. Registered apprenticeship does require a technical instruction requirement. And on that, the electrical and plumber occupations are high-skilled occupations that require a high degree of technical training and task knowledge. And so the related technical instruction, that's another area where the 12,000-hour just scares the heck out of me, is that you're just not going to get proper training in a 12,000-hour OJT program. The periodic wage advancement apprenticeship has built-in wage increment increases as the apprentice skills gain and they're paid more on the job. Safety training is incorporated into the training standards. Registered apprenticeship programs are approved for state and federal prevailed wage projects. And as I alluded to earlier, they also result in higher lifetime wage earnings for Alaskans. Next slide, please. Completion is recognized nationwide for licensing purposes. We're going through all this conversation about which states accept or have Alaska licensing, but what I can definitely say with surety is that every state recognizes registered apprenticeship completion for licensing purposes, and that's just not going to be the case with the 12,000-hour program. Registered apprenticeship is recognized for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act for performance measures because there are employment outcomes, post-secondary credentials, and measurable skills gains. So even though the state has a single employer verification form, EVF, I call it, that just the employer certifies, the apprenticeship program is actually tracking the training that's going on the job. The Alaska WIOA combined plan, the draft that's out for comment, it has 186 references to registered apprenticeship or to apprenticeship in there. Okay, it's not an experiment. The Alaska Work Apprenticeship Plan was approved by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board in 2018. And then registered apprenticeship is based on employment, where the employers are going to screen me first to see if they want to employ me before they'll take me in. I think the 12,000 hour, it looks like you just got to stand up to the counter now, pay your $250, and then you go find a job. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And are there any questions?
Questions for Mr. Hakala? All right. Thank you very much for your time. It doesn't look like there's any questions. I appreciate your doing the comparison, the side-by-side comparison of sort of the elements of registered apprenticeship and compared to the 12,000-hour on-the-job option. I think that the structured training, the technical requirements being incorporated, and the safety are all, key strengths of the apprenticeship program that have been really valuable for us. Thanks for your time today, Mr. Hakala. All right, next up we have Deb Kelly, who is the statewide director of apprenticeship with the Alaska Joint Electrical Apprenticeship and Training Trust. Welcome, Ms. Kelly. Will you put yourself on the record and begin your presentation?
Thank you, Chair Spahnholz. My name is Deborah Kelly, the record, and I'm the statewide director of the NECA IBEW apprenticeship program for Alaska. Chair Spahnholz, members of the committee, I really appreciate you letting me come here and speak today. I can't express how important this is to us to be able to give feedback on something that will affect our programs and affect Alaska so much. I'm here as the director of the NECA IBEW apprenticeship program, but I bring some additional background that I believe is relevant. I completed an apprenticeship through this program. I started right out of high school, and I became a journeyman lineman, worked in the trade for quite some time. I worked in safety as a safety professional for line contractor, and I was also the director of labor standards and safety under Governor Walker. And I am here to talk to you about what this proposal means to us. And I would start off with a brief description of what we do. Right now, we've got about 325 apprentices statewide. We're at a low, a seasonal low, so this is a little bit seasonally adjusted. We're down from over 500 five or six years ago before the economic downturn. We host currently four active apprenticeships. We train wiremen, which is better known colloquially as electricians, telecommunications workers, power linemen, and tree trimmers. And 8,000 hours for reference is about 4 years of full-time work. And we have two training facilities, one in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. And we do have 43 apprentices currently in rural communities. Again, this is a seasonal low just because we bring in apprentices mostly in the spring and summer, but they're always matriculating out as they complete the program. Mm-hmm. Basically, wherever our contractors work, we do have apprentices.
Oh, you know, Ms. Kelly, before we get too much further, I just want to make a note on time. It's 4:45. We're scheduled to go to 5:15. You are one of three remaining testifiers. I want to make sure to get through everybody. We have other folks who have been waiting on the line the whole time, and so I think we're going to run a couple of minutes late. I just want to give everybody a heads up on that. We'll probably go till 5:30, but if we can try to move along at a clip to achieve that goal, that'd be good.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. And I do have a lot of slides with a lot of words, but
hang on, we're going to need a quick at ease. We're going to amend my earlier statement on timing. There's another meeting happening right after we end. Apparently, there's no transition time between the meetings, so I apologize. We're going to go to 5:15. The two other folks are going to testify after you. We're not doing presentations, so I think that you've got about 15 minutes. All right, proceed, Deb. Ms. Kelly, I apologize.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. About to say, I have a lot of text on my slides, but they're mostly for visual aid, so I'll try to stick to the high points. Here on this next slide, I just have an image of, as a registered apprenticeship program, we have to provide comprehensive training, which includes curriculum as well as on-the-job training. So here is one example from our wireman apprenticeship standards of what we will provide over 5 years of classroom training for a person who wants to become a journeyman wireman. In addition to that, we have pretty comprehensive on-the-job training requirements. These are the types of work that a wireman should get over the course of apprenticeship, and on the right side of the page you'll see the ideal number of hours we try to get for them. This is a target. We are restricted by the work that's available, but we do make sure that our folks are well-rounded enough to be safe and effective in the workplace. So we've got three full pages of the different kinds of work that an electrician will need over the course of an apprenticeship to be a safe and effective electrician. So also, I'd like to briefly talk about the Certificate of Fitness statutes under which these regulations are being changed. Certificates of Fitness is a bit of a confusing term for some, better and more colloquially known as plumbing and electrical licenses, so I will use those terms interchangeably. Basically, this is a public safety statute. These are licensed trades because poor plumbing or electrical work causes fires, carbon monoxide poisoning, contaminated drinking water, and electrocutions. And the carbon monoxide poisoning is an especial issue here in Alaska because we're one of the highest rates in the nation mm-hmm. for carbon monoxide because of our long, cold winters. And public safety is so important to the legislature that to ensure that this work is done correctly, there's not just certificate of fitness, which ensures that the workers know what they're doing. There's also electrical and mechanical administrators' licenses, which ensures that all of the work has kind of an expert supervision, if you will, or expert oversight. And then also there are state inspectors that go around and actually check. So there are three overlapping statutes because this is such an important issue. And this right here is why it matters. I do not have numbers for Alaska, but home electrical fires account for 51,000 fires each year. Typo there. Nearly 500 deaths, more than 1,400 injuries, and $1.3 billion in property damage. And each year, more than 400 Americans die from unintentional carbon monoxide poisoning not linked to fire. More than 20,000 visit the emergency room, and more than 4,000 are hospitalized. And I do have some numbers from, or some examples from Alaska, but I don't think that is necessary with the time constraints. So the reason the department's proposal matters in this context is that the proposal results in no training standard, period. They keep calling this an alternate OJT pathway, but there's no expectation or requirement of on-the-job training. It replaces all the things you just saw, what represents comprehensive training, with nothing. And so an employer can and will hire somebody as a grunt doing the easiest parts of those trades. So for line work, which I'm most familiar with, they'll be shoveling, they'll be potholing for, you know, buried electrical cables, and they'll be putting PVC pipe together. And maybe someday they'll get that journeyman license, and maybe they won't. But if they do, they are not at all qualified to then go up in the air and handle high voltages and understand why it's so important not to open a neutral going to a home, and why you can cause a fire when you put copper over aluminum in a crimp connector. I mean, these are things that you have to learn, and a lot of these things need to be learned in a classroom or at least in a curriculum type delivery. This proposal by the department would be unthinkable for other skilled professions that we rely on for our safety, like nurses, pilots, firefighters, or EMTs. But I really think that this proposal just shows that bias that still exists in society against blue-collar trades, that blue-collar trades education is less than. It doesn't count because there's no college degree associated with it. I mean, we rely on this work to be safe. You can't see electrical wiring, you can't see plumbing, and if you can see it, I mean, good luck understanding what you're looking at, because 99.9% of it is hidden from us, and we have to trust it. And that's why these certificates of fitness, along with the required training and experience, is so important. I mean, it's surprising to hear this coming from a department that has long pushed to recognize career and technical education as equal to and just as worthy as college education. As someone who's not college educated myself, I value the education I've had over the years, and I think that it's been integral to my success. And the other issue with the department's proposal is that it really does provide a bidding advantage for those who choose not to go the apprenticeship path, because they will be able to use two low-wage trainees for every journeyman, whereas registered apprenticeship participants can only use one low-wage apprentice to each journeyman. Along with the fact that trainees have no stepped wage increase, while apprentices must, that's going to erode at the number of apprentices that we have here in Alaska. The other problem is this trainee license.
You have a question, Representative Fields?
On that point about tilting the field in terms of bidding opportunities, could you just list some of the businesses that invest in AJET's electrical training program, some of the contractors who have funded this program over the years?
Our program, we've got over 50 contractors at this time employing apprentices, Alcan Electric, various public utilities and collective utilities. We've got Hawkinson. I can definitely go down a list. I can name maybe some of the ones that submitted public comments. I'm afraid my contractors might call and say, why didn't you include me in here?
Madam Chairwoman, suffice to say, 50 contractors is a lot, and it just disturbs me that these contractors who have invested for generations would be undermined. I know inadvertently, but still undermined by this change. Thank you.
In addition, by expanding this alternative path to 12,000 hours, I think it's going to create more of a class system where you see people working for years and years. 12,000 hours is a long time to try to get all that experience in a seasonal and project-based trade. And it's meaningless hours. There's no guarantee of training or relevant experience. And in addition, it really turns these trainee certificates into just a ransom to work, because there's nothing associated, no requirement associated with them. So employers will now be able to bring in out-of-state labor, pay that $200 ransom, put them to work, and send them home at the end of the season, which we already see in our uncertificated telecommunications trades quite a bit, is having to compete with that cheap labor from lower-wage states. So I think that in whole, the department's proposal will hurt apprenticeships, result in unqualified workers being classified as journeymen, and bring in more out-of-state workers instead of developing Alaska's workforce. Mm-hmm. Through this whole process, I really feel like it appears that the department doesn't understand the effects of their own proposal, because they didn't talk to stakeholders, they didn't do their homework, and now they're pushing a proposal with no supporters on the record that I can tell. To the next slide. I think the department should have known better. This diagram is from their own proposal for a $1 million grant, which they did receive and are working under to expand the number of construction apprentices here in Alaska. These are the stakeholders that the grant identified that they would work with to expand these apprenticeships. And from what I can tell, I've talked to somebody in every single one of those areas, and or multiple people in some cases. They did not speak to anybody on this list. The lack of engagement really showed with the original draft, where the department proposed to show to allow 10 student trainees to each journey level worker on the job site. The department proposed to eliminate testing for lineman and plumber PU licenses. Yet when you look at their Q&A or their letters to the legislators, you'll see that they repeatedly claim that this would be restricted to classroom only environments controlled by instructors on the 10-to-1 ratio. The reg doesn't say that. Proposing to eliminate testing, you'll find multiple places where the department said in writing that upon completion of the 12,000 hours, individuals would be required to pass the same extensive 4-hour exam. In the letter to Representative Fields, the alternative pathway proposed in the regulations requires 12,000 hours of experience in order to qualify to take the journeyman exam. They either didn't know or forgot to tell the public that they proposed to eliminate two of these exams. I mean, in addition to that, and I'm just trying to make the point that they need to dial back and do this due diligence, because they were saying until today, this is the first time I've seen the department actually say that these requirements began in 2003 and not 2006, but they used that year to set the bar for a justification that there were 3 electrical industry fatalities after 2006 and 0 in the 10 years before, and therefore this proposed change will not affect job site safety in the electrical industry. So a brief search of the department's website and OSHA.gov, I found 3 examples. Here they are. 1999, Whitewater Engineering, an employee of electric power and telephone line contractor, was working near an overhead power line and was electrocuted. 2, Ready Electric, an employee was installing a new electric cable. The employee apparently contacted an energized part and was electrocuted. And here's one from DHSS's website, that an apprentice lineman was killed when caught in a trencher. And the department's own occupational and safety and health program investigated these. There's no excuse for the department using numbers to back up, to justify this argument when they didn't even count these 3 fatalities. And in any case, to say that these 3 fatalities from 2006 to 2016 are justification to break down training and supervision standards defies logic, in my opinion. In addition, Director Mitchell just said that the public comment period was effective. I thought it was very effective. These are examples from the public comment that the department, these are actually ones that the department decided were unclear. I just grabbed these quotes from the department's own excerpts of those. And I don't think there's any way to read these in good faith and say that they're unclear in their intent. You can read them yourselves and see how singular the public's response was. And this was not just one campaign by one interest group. This was a very diverse group of people that responded that included mechanical contractors, electrical contractors, independent safety consultants, the governor's appointed Alaska Safety Advisory Council, the Associated Builders and Contractors, Alaska Power Association, City and Borough of Juneau Building Inspectors, four different unions, 15 representatives, 9 senators, and hundreds of Alaskans. This was a diverse response, and people spoke with one voice. Please stop these apprenticeship changes. So if the department feels like this process was effective, I really hope they make it effective and listen to these comments. One last example I'd like to give is this piece on heavy equipment operation. It hasn't been a big part of the discussion because it's not the main issue that folks have with the regulation, but I do think it's another example of the department just hasn't done their homework yet to make these changes. Alaska Statute 1860-660 defines electrical wiring. The reason that's significant is electrical wiring is the term used to say when licenses are required. They're required for people doing electrical wiring. You'll see that it means the entire electrical system and all devices and techniques used in the process of installation. The department's proposed definition exempts several things, but I'll go ahead and paraphrase it. Electrical wiring does not include other construction heavy equipment used in connection with electrical code work. Now, they used the 1984 AG's opinion as their reason for doing that. Mm-hmm. The 1984 AG opinion was about helicopters setting towers for a power line project. And the AG opinion determined that that work was not covered because setting a tower is not electrical wiring. It's not subject to the code. You can't find a code provision on how to set a tower. However, since the department did not consult with us or other stakeholders, they may not have realized that heavy equipment is used to do electrical wiring all the time. And you can't take a work process and just say, well, that's not electrical wiring because you're using this tool instead of this tool to perform it. And this is the quote from the AG opinion itself. A certificate of fitness is required wherever and whenever electrical work is done. And a certificate is required when electrical wiring is performed subject to the standards of the National Electrical Safety Code. Now, these are just my own pictures. I didn't have a lot of time to put this together, but I thought I'd just show you by way of demonstration what kind of heavy equipment might be used to perform electrical wiring. And it's clear from the AG opinion that electrical work is covered by certificate of fitness, period. It's just like the public comments, it's impossible to read that AG opinion and in good faith come to the conclusion that it's unclear. And I do hope I've been brief enough, but my ask is that the department come back to the stakeholders with real engagement. And engaging with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board is great to understand the workforce investment impacts of this, but this is a public safety statute, and these are public safety regulations, and I ask that they talk to the industries that understand the safety issues inherent to this kind of work. And that concludes my presentation. I'd love to take your questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kelly. Are there any questions?
Sure, I've got a question.
Representative.
Thanks, through the chair. As someone who went through an apprenticeship program yourself, could you talk about why it matters to have mentorship on the job versus 12,000 hours of work experience where there may or may not be mentorship and oversight by a qualified journey worker?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, absolutely. You know, I showed you a lot of diagrams, but the one showing the breadth of experience you have to get is really critical, right? Because line work involves some really boring and boneheaded stuff where you just shovel and you work hard and you put pipe together, and you do need to learn some things about it, but it's pretty basic. And other parts of it are very technical and difficult and represent a minority of the work, but those are the critical things you have to know. And that mentorship piece comes in because the people that you work with have completed apprenticeship, and so they understand not only the practical aspect, but the electrical theory, the rigging calculations, all of the things that go together to make a qualified journeyman lineman. And when you end up working with somebody who maybe came in from out of state, maybe doesn't understand as much, you know, you've got a whole crew of people there who can cover and help, you know, help herd immunity, right? You've got this whole crew of people, and most of them have completed apprenticeship and understand the work, and they're all committed to continuing that investment in their own trade. And that's why I wonder why the department is using the fact that Alaskans are at a disadvantage as an excuse. They're basically saying there's a little hole in our boat. We're letting in these out-of-state workers with lower qualifications. So let's scuttle the boat. And, you know, if you want to get anywhere, you don't scuttle the boat.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your presentation today. I think we learned some things, and you helped illustrate some of the challenges associated with the regulations as proposed by the department. Next up, we've got Amy Nybert, who's president and CEO of the Associated Builders and Contractors. I believe she's on the phone. Ms. Nybert?
Yes, hi. My name is Amy Nybert, with president and CEO with ABC of Alaska. I've been president for a little over 8 years now, and with me also today, I have Amber Cartier, my director of apprenticeship, who is listening as well. I first want to just go over who ABC is. We are a merit construction trade association, and we believe that contracts should be awarded to the most responsive bidder based on safety, quality, and price, whether workers choose to be union or non-union. The Alaska chapter has been in operation since 1998, and we've had an apprenticeship program since 1999. We have over 120 member owners, contractors, suppliers, and associates statewide. They range from big corporations to the small family business. They have joined for a number of reasons, ranging from ABC's philosophy to the services that are provided. Currently, of these member companies, over 70 are participating in our apprenticeship program. That's over 50% of our members utilizing ABC's program. So today, with the proposed regulations, we have no reason to believe that the department is trying to undermine the safety or create an untrained licensed workforce. Nevertheless, we are concerned that could be the result. ABC generally supports on-the-job training, although for electrical and plumbing, due to safety, it's important to ensure comprehensive training for all trades. While we think apprenticeship is the appropriate way to become licensed, we think with the right oversight and controls, the regulation could get to a place where we were comfortable with any OJT that would provide comprehensive training. The problem is no one was consulted. No dialogue, no conversations, not even a phone call. And the regulations do not provide any assurances or protections to ensure the training is bona fide and not merely a mechanism to hire without any goal of actually having people complete the 12,000 hours. We believe the regulations should be withdrawn and the department engage stakeholders to work on any problems. If out of state, and just to reiterate, if the department would engage stakeholders, we likely could find an agreement to most of the regulations proposed. We ask the department to engage with us, a conversation that identifies any problems and works with us to identify all solutions. Is there any questions?
Representative Fields.
Thanks, Ms. Nybert, through the chair. Could you just talk about how ABC supports its member companies with on-the-job learning as part of the apprenticeship program, with the didactic learning that as proposed by the department would not be part necessarily of a 12,000-hour pathway?
Yes, through the chair. ABC of Alaska is a correspondence training program. So apprentices come into ABC, apply to the apprenticeship program, go through a pre-screening process, an interview process, and then once they are hired on with a member company, they begin their apprenticeship training. They're given their correspondence materials, which consist of 5 books, the first book being like a beginner safety, and then into their apprentice trainings, either electrical, plumbing, or sheet metal, and then they are required to report and test back to us monthly throughout the 4 or 5 years that it takes to become a journeyman.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Nybert? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Our last testifier today is Tom Fisher of Aaron Plumbing and Heating out of Fairbanks. Mr. Fisher, can you introduce yourself and provide your testimony?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Tom Fisher. I've spent 42 years in plumbing mechanical industry, 40-year member in good standing of the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, Local 375 in Fairbanks, owner and president of Aaron Plumbing and Heating Company, a firm established in Fairbanks and in continuous operation since 1982. I hold a master plumber's license with the city of Fairbanks, also a mechanical administrator's license with the state of Alaska, as well as a general contractor's license and the management chair of the JATC in Fairbanks. And I also serve on the Fairbanks Code Review Commission and have a bachelor of science degree in mechanical engineering. So when I first read the proposed regulations, I was certainly in disbelief. I had to read it several times because this conflicts everything that I've experienced as far as the message I've been getting from the state. You know, this 12,000 hour seems like a workaround to the apprenticeship program, which I don't think that there's a need to eliminate the apprenticeship registration requirement for plumbing and electrical trainees. It seems crazy to me that this proposal would be submitted. And I don't have the info. I'm just a contractor. I don't know what you guys have got for feedback from the public, but I can imagine that it's numerous and in opposition to this proposed regulation changes. Our apprenticeship, a little bit about our apprenticeship, and Hakala and Kelly have, you know, given you a pretty good indication of the comprehensive training and the rigorous curriculum associated with these training programs. And this 12,000 hour workaround would certainly provide the state with an undertrained and underskilled workforce. I also see a red flag in the documentation requirement of 12,000 hours, and then you can take your exam and have a journeyman in specifically the plumbing and the electrical trades. Those two trades in themselves, they provide a lot of potential risk, and I'm just in disbelief that the state would want to make any amendments or regulation changes or reductions in regulations and putting the public at risk. In Fairbanks, we have a five-year program. Currently, we have 82 current participants in the apprenticeship program. And in our apprenticeship, they actually, in a classroom setting for 10 to 14 weeks, five times over the course of 5 years. It is a very rigorous curriculum. The proposed regulations don't have any kind of a training standard that I could see. So I urge members of this committee to not approve these proposed regulation changes. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Fisher? All right, thank you. Just for clarification for the public, we actually don't have the authority to approve or not to approve the regulations. But I think that Ms. Kelly's word cloud earlier did a very good job of summarizing, I think, what was really a clear and overwhelming concern that came in the public comment in response to the regulations. I appreciate everybody who came out and testified today. I certainly learned several new things that I didn't know about before.
I think that, you know, hearing about the training standards was very helpful to me as well. On Friday, we're going to have another hearing on this topic. We'll have another opportunity to hear from the department, and then we're going to open up to public testimony so we can hear from people about specific concerns and recommendations for the department. And with that, at 5:15, right on the nose, that was pretty amazing. I wasn't sure we were going to make it. This committee is closed. Dave.